Welcome to Fat Camp Show number 22 for sometime around the beginning of March 2017. Fatbike.com presents Fat Camp, a soothing podcast covering different technical aspects of fat and plus bikes. Look for all our shows at fat-bike.com/radio or subscribe to our feed on iTunes.
Welcome to Fat Camp number 22 for a discussion about technical aspects. What do we talk about?
The technical aspects of fat in plus bikes. Right, I think that's the thing I quote every time.
I'm here with the brains of the show, Ken, and I'm Andy. We've never introduced ourselves, I don't think.
No, we're really bad about...
Maybe podcast number one, but... Welcome, campers. Cue us up here, and we're going to... Let me give you a little overview of what we're talking about, okay? We'll probably get off topic, but we've got some...
Off topic?
Yeah, right. We've got some stuff that we've been reading that we want to share. And then we're going to talk about probably a recent new toy that Ken obtained.
I didn't obtain it.
Our
local cycling club.
That
I just happen to be the one that's played on it more than anybody else.
For 6 hours. 3.5.
One day.
Right, one day. Okay, so Lynx, Ken's new toy. Local cycling club's new toy. Jesus Christ. And also reader emails that are kind of cool.
Yeah, we got a couple of other things in there that are pretty cool.
Trying to look at this list here.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, anyways, I am a daily clicker of singletracks.com.
Yep. That's a good site.
Yep. And two things that we're going to put in the show notes that might be worth your while to take a look at if you haven't already are comprehensive fat bike tires and comprehensive plus tires. Super, super cool. They list... I think there's 44 fat tires.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact number, but it's a really good list.
Yeah.
And they've got basic stats. It's nothing like, you know, rocket science, like, you know, there's links to reviews or something crazy. But, you know, they really do a good job of compiling all the basic stuff about it.
Yeah. Weight, price. I think they even indicate, like, what's its intention.
Yeah, they kind of categorize them. They have aggressive fat bike tires. Yep. You know, they got all-rounder fat bike tires.
They got pictures. So if you haven't checked out that, go down to the show notes and check out the 44 comprehensive fat bike tire list. And then also right below that, you'll see the comprehensive plus tires list. You know, did you find anything interesting about that before I tell you what?
I'll be honest. I didn't dig in deep enough because it seemed like stuff I already knew about most of them.
Well, just because you and I are more 29-plus disciples than we are 27-and-a-half disciples, I was surprised at how many 29-plus tires there are that I had never heard about.
Really?
Yeah. The majority of them are 27-and-a-half. There's
really
even a few 26 ones out there. But and I can't recall and, like, say, oh, this one. But as I was just scrolling through looking at available options, I was like, well, I didn't know that it came in a 29-plus. Oh. I didn't know that it came in at 29-plus. So,
luckily there are some pretty decent 29-plus options out
there. Oh, yeah. And so I think once those WTB Rangers wear out in the spring, I might be looking for another one. Because the thing that bugs me about those is the price.
The WTBs?
No. Just in tires in general. And so if you can get a decent tire for a decent price...
Oh, it's a huge deal.
That's way better than getting, you know, a minimal gain on another tire that's not twice as much, but, you know, 50 more bucks.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, tires are bloody expensive. And there's a couple brands out there that are, like, kind of where you're really paying a premium on.
Yeah.
So, I don't blame you. If you can find a cheap option that works well for you, go for it.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of funny thing. It's like, you know, I guess this is more plus oriented, but there's been a few different tires. I'm blanking on the name of the one that I've got. Shoot.
Make it up.
There's
KBS Tasmanian.
Yes, that's exactly it. No. No, there's a few different tires out there that all have a very similar tread pattern. It looks actually kind of like a Racing Ralph type tread pattern.
Okay.
You can only get them in a wire bead. It's got kind of a flimsy casing, but they weigh like 900 grams and they ride really damn good.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and there's like two or three different Chinese manufacturers that have, you know, slapped on different names on these, and I'm totally blanking on the name of it. But it's one of those tires that's one of the better tires I've ridden, and if they threw a Kevlar bead in there, it would probably be one of the best tires I've ridden. And this is coming from a dude who's riding the Midwest who doesn't need sidewall durability and things like that. But it's a really good tread design.
If you find that, send that to me.
Okay.
I want to see what it is.
And we'll try to link it in the show notes, yeah. Because... I mean, this was a tire that you could get for like, I don't remember, it was like $35-40 a tire.
I'd like to put it in my notes because I want to know what this thing is.
Yeah. You know, it's like, right. I was really impressed with it for what it is. It's not pretending to be like, you know, the best tire in the world in any way, but it does a really freaking good job as long as you don't have to worry about casing durability.
Yeah.
And it seemed to set up tubeless fine, but I've got pretty tubeless friendly rims that most tires do fine on. So.
Right.
You know, I was super impressed for the money.
Gotcha.
I want to say one of the names it goes by is like the Transformer or something weird like that.
Oh, it's a robot in disguise.
Yeah, you know it's cool then.
Yeah, wah, 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 wah. I do want to get back to, kind of, you just said something, but I'll forget it. The other article up at Single Tracks, and not that we're plugging Single Tracks at all.
It just, they've had some good stuff.
They've got some good articles, yeah.
So let me jump in here because I'm kind of a junkie when it comes to my online media, like
just a bit
bike sources. I'm rather voracious. Let's just put it that way.
Ooh, I like that word.
But Single Tracks, they've got a really good mix of people that are very pro fat bike and people that can't understand why you would fat bike.
Why would you need one of those?
Right, exactly. Well, it's people that are down like in Atlanta, Georgia type area. I got to admit, you know, it's a harder sell for certain geographic areas of the United States. So,
and maybe they don't need one.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like, I kind of like that because I feel like it shines a stark light on when does it make sense to ride this bike versus this bike versus this bike. And, you know, these people with educated, you know, and informed opinions that are on a lot of different bikes, you know, that kind of balance between, okay, fat bikes are the greatest thing in the world and fat bikes suck, you know, it might not be the most balanced thing for where you, the listener, happens to live because you're probably a fat biker and you're way into it.
Yeah.
However, it does tell you, okay, if I'm going to go travel or I'm going to do this or that, you know, maybe this isn't the best bike for it. Or maybe on my local trails, you know, this nuanced thing is better or whatever. It's just, it helps to suss out that.
Yeah.
So I like the fact that they've got very balanced stuff and they have some very, very, very well done pro, you know, fat bike to stuff.
Point made.
Yep.
The article is titled this, Opinion, a fat bike is the best one bike quiver on a budget.
And I would heartily agree with that.
Oh, there's not a bone in my body.
That was a comprehensive stud show.
It was way longer a discussion that got recorded because it continues.
Well, and that's...
It continued today.
That's the thing because, you know, there's such an incredibly wide range of conditions that you run into in any given winter.
Yeah.
And what that podcast was about was the conditions we ran into, which were very stud friendly, on... you know, like a couple week basis. And since then, there's been just, I mean, so much other stuff that has kind of influenced my opinion about tires and things like that. And even when I feel like I write an article, like, you know, the Touring Wazias, which is what I'm going to talk about here in a second. You know, I've done two articles on those now. And I still feel like in the last week, I've learned a whole nother kind of nuance to the tire, where it's good, where it's not as good, you know, that type of thing.
How many people could write an article about a tire and then like go ride it for a little bit longer and then be like, I got to write another article about this tire and then ride it for a little bit longer and be like, fart, I got to write another article about this tire. Jeez. Yeah. Really? There's more?
Oh yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, okay.
So what's the most recent update?
Well, we got to frame this based upon what our local conditions are.
All right.
And, you know, we've been super, 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 super lucky because we got this kick-ass groomer. We groomed the shit out of, oops, excuse me.
Sorry.
We groomed the crap out of, you know, a big old loop. So we've got this, it's somewhere between 16 and 17 miles of pretty much all just kick butt single track.
We have the longest dedicated fat biking groomed trail in the Lower Peninsula.
Yeah, I think that's accurate based on what people end up publishing online as far as what their trail
systems
have.
And the feedback I'm getting on Instagram is like, whoa, that's the most you got. And I was like, that's what we've heard.
Yeah. So it's just this one gigantic, like, 16, 17-mile loop. And it's hilly. It's tight.
It's got everything.
Yeah, well, it doesn't. It's not got, you know, jumps, and it's not machine built. It's an old school trail underneath the snow, but once you start to groom it, it smooths out. You get all these bermed corners. It is absolutely glorious.
And the reason you get these bermed corners is because of why?
Because we got this kick, just amazing, blew my mind. There's no other way to put it other than blew my mind, groomer.
Dude, I hope that you don't listen to these CDs very often anymore.
No. Yeah, Andy just spilled all over it because I was getting too excited.
Wet with beer.
Yeah.
Jeez.
I was getting a little too excited about my groomer.
Wet with liquid.
No, so we ended up getting a track sled.
Yeah, okay, track sled, right. Minnesota.
Specifically, we ended up getting...
Coracon's our hero.
Yeah. Man. So, okay. I got to come back and talk about the Wazis at some point because you've totally interrupted
me. No, we're on the track sled now.
But the track sled is too awesome not to just go off about it.
Link in the show notes.
Oh, my goodness. Track sleds are like the greatest grooming implement in the world. So what it has done is we have a very tight, you know, typical kind of Midwestern old school single track loop around this like big glacial poop. It's like this 300-foot tall, like, pile of, like, glacial poo out in the middle of this flat area. But it's this amazing area to ride. That's more or less what the Big M is. And we've got this loop that goes around it. And the inner portion, it's cross-country ski trail, which is groomed. The outer portion is all fat bike.
Three major climbs on it, on the outer part.
This is where, like, the Lumberjack 100.
It skirts in and out of the poo.
Yep. They kind of like, you know, traverses the poo at one spot, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
But it's a really, really good place to ride.
Yeah.
And what this track sled, it's a little over 20 inches wide. I don't know if anybody's seen these things, but it's essentially you've got like the track of a snowmobile with an engine mounted on the top.
Of a grocery cart.
Yeah, and then you've kind of got this handle that you hang on to on the back of it, and there's like a hinge, and then there's a platform you stand on, and you steer this thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, in total, it weighs like 220 pounds. It's got, I think it's a 7 horsepower.
It is 7 horsepower.
Yeah, rated engine on it.
Yeah.
And it can go through anything.
Is it a Subaru engine?
No, it's not a Les Baru.
Okay.
this is, I don't remember what kind of, is it,
okay.
It doesn't make a difference.
Right.
The beautiful part about this is that there's a million small engines out there that you could plop on this thing and it would work.
Yeah.
You know, we could burn this thing totally up and then we could throw another one on and it's going to be totally good.
Nice.
Coracon, he's the guy that builds these.
Yeah, for ice fishing.
Well, that's how he started out.
It's
this dude from Minnesota.
He drove here from Minnesota.
Yeah, to deliver it to us to make sure.
Thought he was lost. He's like, I really hope someone's here to buy this sled in the middle of effing nowhere.
Yeah, and you know he wanted to train us on how to use it and give us, you know, a lot of help with it. But it's like basically this is his baby. He builds like 6 or 7 of these a year, and every single one.
On the side.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's got a real job. So every single one he builds different than the last one because he's like, I want to improve this.
Yeah.
So you know, it's like this constantly evolving, and like he's just like honing in on this. So, you know, I think Marquette's got one. Cuyuna Lakes has got one.
Right out in Rochester, New York, they've got one.
Yeah. There's a bunch of different places that have got them.
Yeah.
And so he gets this information back from the, you know, the groomers there, and then he integrates it into the new one. And then he's, you know, keeping up on all this small engine tech and, you know, clutches and all this other kind of stuff. And, you know, just refining this product. So I'm very, 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 very impressed with this track slide. This is something I'm going to be writing an article about. I'm not sure how enthusiastic Gomez and Sven are about me writing an article about it, but damn it, I'm going to write an article about this because this, I don't know how else to put this other than I think about what fat biking did to my perspective on where you can ride and how you can ride a bike. It just, it, you know, it kind of like blew my mind. It's like, there's all this new stuff. This groomer has done the same thing with grooming for fat bikes.
Okay.
And you know, you might be like, okay, it's only, I think it's like 22 inches wide or something. Yeah. Okay. That's going to fit down a lot more single track, but then that's only one small aspect of it. I mean, it's like, it's this super maneuverable, super capable. It goes through really deep snow.
Yeah, it does.
I've spent 2 weekends just working the crap out of this groomer, like in the toughest possible grooming conditions, because we hadn't officially groomed any of this trail until the middle
of the winter.
Flipping, yeah, February. So it's got to go through 2 feet of standing snow that's like crusty in some spots. It's wet and heavy in some spots, and it does it no problem. I mean, there's places where like you're getting on these bigger uphills where, yeah, the machine has to work, and you got to, you basically got to like skateboard kick on a lesser grade. And then there's places where you might even have to get off and like walk next to the thing and like drive it up, but it still produces just amazing trail.
Yeah,
that's the thing. The end result is still just like blow your mind good.
Not only can it go through all that snow, what it lays down and what the results of that path that you went through.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Oh my gosh,
it's great.
And we even lucked out even more because Ken got out and spent, him and our friend Mike Peterson spent 6 hours.
I groomed like, I think it was like 12 and a half ish miles in 4 hours. It was just like maximum effort. I was blown out afterwards. And then I handed it off to another guy, Mike Peterson, and he finished off the loop. So we got like the full 17 miles in.
And then it rained and got warm.
And then it dropped down.
And then it got really cold for like,
oh my goodness,
3 or 4 nights. It got down to like the, like 11, and then even out there it was like 4 sometimes when I'd come home from work.
Yep,
it's like ridiculous, and it just set up so perfect.
My God, it was amazing. Oh,
everybody's Strava was like Nirvana, game changer.
Yeah,
where'd this come from? You know,
it was better and faster conditions than you run into during the best conditions during the summer.
Yeah, I saw that video and I emailed Ken back and I was like, is it really this fast? He's like, it's summer fast right now.
Yeah. Well, and what Andy's talking about is I ended up capturing some GoPro footage.
Ooh, I'll put the show notes on that.
Yeah, we'll definitely drop it into the show notes. I ended up doing that. I'm trying to remember. I rode Wednesday night on my own and I was like, oh my goodness, this is the best thing I've ever done. And it was just, it just turned into this hammer fest because it was so much fun to rip. I mean, like, there was such good traction.
There's so much more traction.
Yeah. The biggest issue was that where I would groom wasn't exactly where you would put your tires during the summer. So sometimes there were some trees along the way that were tighter.
Yeah.
And so what happens is if you're going so fast, you naturally, I mean, like, you your bike, your center of gravity, like the bike and you total, has to cant over. There's no getting around it. And there's ways you can use body English and stuff like that to kind of keep your bike more upright or this, that, or whatever, and try to squeeze around these trees. But there was just some places that, you know, I was like, damn it, I need a dropper post because I cannot get out of the way of these trees.
Yeah.
To, like, get around these corners.
Oh, no,
and go as fast as I want to go.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, you know, I rode it Wednesday night, mind blown. I then went out with Scott Quiring on Thursday night. And anytime you ride with Quiring, even if he's tapering for a race,
right,
you know you're still going to end up being just balls to the walls.
Right,
Quiring, and he's fast as hell. So, you know, once again, I was like, damn it, I wish I ended up having the dropper post. So then finally on the weekend, I put the dropper post on. Unfortunately, conditions degraded a little bit and it wasn't as grippy.
Oh, you have it on right now?
Yeah, I've ridden it the last 2 days.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I needed the dropper post to get out of the way.
No, I totally know what you're talking about, because there were spots, and I'm not as tall as you, that I had to be like, I was, whoa, holy cow.
Yeah. I don't know how many times, like, I always ride with pogies on my
bike. So how will you groom it? Will you groom it differently then from now on?
No, yes, but I'll get to that in a second.
Right.
But what I was just going to say is, like, I ride with pogies all the time, and, you know, they kind of protrude a little bit outside your handlebars. Like, I almost wore a hole through, like, the outside edge of my pogies.
Oh, wow.
From kissing trees.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that's over, like, 4 days of riding.
Yeah.
Like, 70 miles. So, yes. Okay, getting back to this groomer. And I apologize, listenership, because we're kind of just like...
He's a bit excited.
You know, just like, you know, too excited to, like, kind of keep it all in.
Listener emails are coming up, so...
Okay, so this groomer.
Yeah.
One of the most just completely kick-butt aspects to this thing is... I can fit it in the back of my Subaru Outback. Okay? I can load it by myself. I can unload it by myself. Every other piece of grooming equipment that I've owned, like if you're talking a snowmobile and a roller, you know, if you've got a snowmobile trailer, you can load the snowmobile no problem. But if it's a utility sled, it's going to, you know, you might not have enough room for the roller.
Right.
So you got to then kind of get this bigger trailer, and it's kind of a pain in the butt. Or if you're talking about a Rokan, once again, you're still talking... You know, the Rokan, and you're talking about a roller.
Right.
This thing, it just, I mean, it goes into
the... It fits in the Les Barreaux.
Yeah. It fits in, like, my little Outback. It's no big deal. It'll fit in any SUV. It'll fit in any, you know, like, pickup truck. It'll fit in a minivan. That's what Corcon ended up, like, coming here and dropping it off
in a minivan.
Yeah. So, I mean... I don't know how to express this enough as far as the versatility that adds.
Coming to a trail near you, KBS will groom your trails for you.
Well, okay, so I look at our area, and I don't want to end up starting naming names because I'm getting ahead of myself, but we've got a linear trail around here that...
There, too.
Yeah, we are working on getting approval to groom.
A linear trail.
But what... we can do is we can set up basically like this, I'm blanking on the term right now, but, a relay. We can set up a grooming relay. So, So what you can do is you can end up having one person groom for 10 miles. You like cross a road or whatever.
Right.
And
you're blown
out. Hand it off to the next dude.
Yeah.
Who then grooms the next 10 miles. And the guy who first started off, he'll drive up and meet the other guy.
Right.
And you can basically keep doing that. And you literally could groom 50 miles of trail in a relay fashion, and nobody's going to be like hugely inconvenienced.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's enough versatility with vehicles. You don't have to have like some special trailer to load all the crap up.
No, and this linear, linear trail is awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, all of a sudden... We have, and then there's another kind of, I would describe this as the democratization of grooming.
Ooh, wow.
Where,
okay.
You know, it's like in the past, grooming has been like this specialized equipment and, you know, it's expensive and it's not something that somebody's just going to drop their own coin on to get.
Right.
But look at the pricing on these track sleds. So the best track sled that we got, after you got tax and shipping and all this other kind of crap in there. You know, it ended up being a little less than $6,000. That's still cheaper than a Rokan.
Okay.
You don't have to buy a roller in addition.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's more capable than a Rokan.
Yeah.
You can go through the deepest, nastiest snow, and it still produces, you know, as good a trail as you possibly can. It's user serviceable, real basic stuff. You know, it's very uncomplicated what's going on with this device as a whole.
So why is this a democratization of grooming?
So if you look at like the Russian ones, like there's a new Russian importer. I think the brand is called Snowdog.
Yeah.
And they were just available this year as far as I know.
Yeah.
They cost like, it's somewhere like $3,500 to $4,000.
Oh.
So all of a sudden this price point has gotten down so low that, I mean, if you could end up making your local trails just kick butt.
Yeah.
And all it'd take is $4,000. There's a lot of people that would end up either, you know, dropping the full $4,000 yeah. or being like, all right, dude.
It wouldn't be that hard to raise that much money.
You chip in a grand, 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 and we'll end up sharing the duties of trying to end up grooming.
Right. Dude, and, I only have $300. That's fine. That's great. Right. We'll take your $300.
So you've got the financial aspect.
Right.
You've got the transportation aspect.
Yeah.
You've then also got the capability aspect where,
yeah.
you know, you can end up being in an area that's really difficult to groom, whether it be, you know, super narrow trails or whatever, and this thing can do it.
Yeah.
So you've kind of got this trifecta of these categories that all combine to just make this the most exciting thing I think that's happened to fat bike grooming, like really since, you know, the Carruthers brothers came up with the roller.
Okay.
I think it's equal to that or potentially even better.
So that leaves lowly groomers like us on a snowmobile and a roller.
No, there's a place for that.
Right.
There's totally a place for that.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, like, I look at our trail system, and we've got a smaller loop that...
is wider.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of... I mean, we call it the little loop, but it's kind of the beginner loop.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where we groom at 30-some inches wide. You know, it's very beginner-friendly. It's fairly flat.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great place to end up going out and having a good experience if you're not, like, the hardcore.
20 inches is tight.
Yeah.
I think not everybody that fat bikes wants to, first of all, go 16, 17 miles, nor do they want a 20-inch track so that the snowmobile and the roller and the pan have its place. You're right.
Yep. Oh, they do.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of things that snowmobile will be able to end up doing that, you know, this thing can't.
Yeah.
You know, but this thing kicks butt for technical single track. It's like, you know, that's one of the major things with our land managers that we don't want to have to chop out trees, widen trail, do all this other kind of stuff.
And there's another article that I'll put in the show notes from Single Tracks about how fat bikers are working with other users and other agencies to ensure that trail access. And we probably mentioned it here before, but our National Forest Service locally they can't give us enough thumbs up. I emailed her this week, shared with her what was going on, and I got a huge thank you. Hey, this is great. We want to help you out in the future. Thanks for doing this. Blah, blah, blah. So they're just getting more people out, more people into the national forest.
Yep. Yeah, so, and more recreational users, which is a positive.
I think it's a really good article, and yours truly made a comment at the bottom, actually, kind of summarizing what we've been doing. But, you know, we've got dedicated fat bike. We don't have to work with skiers or snowshoers or snowmobilers anymore. It's just for us.
Yeah, and this linear trail we're talking about, yeah, it's going to still be shared use. There are going to be some snowshoers that want to get out in there and stuff, which is, you know, that's great. No. I think it's going to make it better for them too.
Right.
But, you know, it kind of blows my mind how just incredible it would be to have, you know, like a point-to-point ride where you can ride for 50 miles and just kick butt single track the entire way. That was not even in my consciousness as far as what was possible for grooming for a fat bike.
Having been groomed by two or three guys over the course of 2 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're not going to be able to turn, you know, like ungroomed trail into like just magic, you know, perfect single track. There's no groomer that's going to do that. But if you get the right combination of weather and some other things like that, I think there's definitely a possibility that this could be the way to go.
That was amazing when it rained and then just froze. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we really lucked out.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess.
Anyway.
Yeah. This groomer is absolutely amazing. I think that track sleds are going to change. It's going to rock people's world.
Right.
It's going to completely change the fat bike world.
Yeah.
Based upon my experience. And I've only groomed with it twice.
Right.
You know, one was, you know, like 2 feet of fresh snow. Fresh-ish snow. It'd been snow that accumulated over the winter. You know, the top 8 inches was really heavy, wet stuff. It was fairly close to freezing. So, you know, it's every checkbox for what is the most challenging grooming conditions you can get to was checked. And this thing still ended up kicking butt.
Wow.
And then, you know, it just produced just perfect trail. Cause we had good weather after that, that kind of got that.
Yeah,
so I can't say enough positive about it.
Right.
Now, so getting back, because I did not talk about the Wazias and I wanted to talk about the Wazias.
Oh my gosh.
So
you this is the first time you've ever brought us back.
Well, because I mean, I love the Wazia. I mean, I'm gonna be the first to say it. I think it's a really good tire, but it's one of those things where there's this subtlety to tires, and
I just got to mention before you get into it, though, on our list of what we needed to do, it was called the Terrence Wazia update instead of the Terrain. I just killed the C on it.
Okay,
it
good.
Made me laugh
Man,
out loud.
Autocorrect. Terrence,
yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
So, I've been riding this, you know, these trails like three times. You know, like, you know, each one's been pretty solid ride. I've been riding with, you know, riders that I ride with a bunch. So I kind of, I know where I stack up next to them.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dillinger 5, definitely a better cornering, groomed tire. Like these kind of conditions.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Good
now,
to know.
Now,
okay.
The Wazia was really user-friendly as far as, like, the slip and slide. Like, it'll let go, and it'll catch, and it'll still be okay. Excuse me.
And this is just empirical data that you're getting.
Oh, this is definitive. I can tell you right now, the Wazia does not corner as well as the Dillinger 5.
Okay. All right.
On a groom trail.
On a groom trail.
Yeah, like, or I should say on the groom trails that we've had recently.
Right.
Because I couldn't hang with a couple of people that I know exactly what they're capable of as far as bike handling skills.
Yeah.
Normally I can hang with them, and I just couldn't.
Okay.
So, like, I mean, today we started off, you know, below freezing, in the snow.
Oh, wet.
Yeah, it was real wet. And then it warmed up as the day went on. You know, I was out there for, I don't know, 3.5 hours or something.
Yeah.
And I mean, there were spots where I was just like, I was drifting corners left and right, and people on Dillinger's were just stuck. Yeah.
Yeah, that was me. I was attacking from the back.
No, but I think it's worth noting. I think the ideal setup might be a Dillinger 5 on the front and then a Terrain Wazia 4.6.
Interesting.
On the rear.
Okay.
Because I do it, and then, you know, these two tires, and it's like I'm really, like, you know, mincing hairs here when I talk about
the
difference.
That's what the show's all about.
It is. You know, the Wazia's got really good traction. When I say it's not as good as the Dillinger 5, it's not saying it sucks. It's you know, this is in the great category.
I really like when you say it like that, though.
But the Dillinger 5 is, like, you know, really good. You know, it's like the Dillinger 5 in the conditions we've been on, like the Van Helga and the Flow and Dunderbeast,
yeah,
are both equally as good.
So there's a reason that those guys in the ITI ride the Dilly 5s.
Well, at the time, for sure.
Because they're that good.
Yeah, they were just an incredible tire. So, yeah, for sure on that one.
And they're still riding them, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's still – the Dillinger 5 is still one of the best tires out there. But the good part is that the Wazia – it's almost as good. And, like, where the subtlety comes in is that, you know how most of these tires have a direction you can run them?
Right.
Like, you look at the Dillinger 5, it's kind of like, you know, V-shaped.
Yeah.
So if you run the V, sort of the slow direction, the traction direction on the rear.
Yeah.
And you're running the Wazia, which doesn't have a V pattern, but it's got slanted
Chevron-ish.
Knobs.
Chevron-ish.
Well, it's not even Chevron. It's just, it's got slanted knobs.
I really wanted to use that word. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, the Chevron, that's Dilly 5.
All right. Slanted knobs.
Yeah, slanted knobs. Yeah. So there's just kind of like a fast direction and a slow direction on it.
Okay.
But so if you run the Terrain Wazia in the fast direction, it's got slightly less traction on like a groomed trail that's starting to soften up and like get warm.
Okay.
It's got slightly less traction than the Dillinger 5.
Yeah.
But if you run it in the traction direction, then it's got slightly more.
Okay.
And then when it comes to corners, I mean, like on a 2-minute downhill, I might lose, I don't know, like 5 seconds, maybe not even, like a couple seconds.
Dude, Strava's alive in the winter now.
It is. But I mean, that'd be one of those things where it's like, I'm drifting corners left and right. I got my dropper. I'm just like, you know, I'm just working the downhills.
Dropper.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, you know, just trying to nail everything.
Yeah.
And I would fall a little bit behind them.
Okay.
You know, every really tight corner, they might get like, you know, another couple of feet on me.
So you flip it around?
For the rear traction. And this is where I'm like, okay, so if you run the Wazi on the rear, you're going to get a little bit better traction than you are with the, you know, the Dillinger 5.
Okay.
I really don't notice that big a difference as far as rolling resistance. I mean, the Wazi still seems to roll pretty well. I think the Dillinger 5 is slightly faster in a lot of conditions. But it, you know, running one on the rear, like a Wazi on the rear, I wouldn't care.
Oh.
And then running the Dillinger 5 on the front, I think that's going to end up being a better cornering on groomed single track.
Do you think it has anything to do with the studs based upon your recent riding?
It could.
Okay.
But that said, when I rode with Quiring during the midweek, and that was just like primo conditions, you know, I don't remember what it was. It was like 10 degrees or something.
Yeah.
Oh, it was like cold, you know, super, 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 super grippy.
Yeah.
He was riding a Dillinger 5 without studs.
Yeah.
And then I rode with another dude, Brian, who was riding Dillinger 5s with studs.
We call him Jerry because he is one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a total Jerry.
With studs, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, I kind of had a chance to, like, compare, you know, both of them. And they're both really fast, good, strong riders.
Oh, yeah.
So I kind of had a chance to compare like what their traction was like compared to my traction.
Okay.
And it fell behind in both situations. Huh. So, I do think that the narrower stud pattern on the Wazia, when we were in those super deep cold conditions, there was times like the first night I rode out there, I could, you know, I was riding kind of at sunset or whatever, and I could see glazed parts to the trail, and I could tell when I got beyond the studs. You know, it's like all of a sudden I kind of got to a certain lean angle and like the bike would start to kind of let go off from underneath me.
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't like that drastic. There was nobody riding that night that was on Dilly 5s. So I don't know how that would have compared to a studded Dillinger 5.
That's good because you got to enjoy the ride without thinking about that crap.
Well, I still thought about all that.
Oh, okay.
I can't stop thinking about that. Anyway. However, I will say that, you know, I don't think the stud placement is that big a deal on the Terrain versus the Dillinger 5, unless you're like in some kind of crazy conditions, like with lean angles.
Like, that's really interesting that a new tire comes out and it's really that good.
Yeah.
Because so often a new tire comes out and it's a niche tire.
Yeah.
Or it's not really good at anything. Because it's trying to be good at everything.
Well, you and I have talked about this before, and like, I've kind of dissed on some tires because, you know, what if I'm going to give a tire an excellent review, it's because it did something exemplary, or, you know, it might end up being the breadth of what it could do really, really, really good.
Yeah.
Was very wide, you know, and these tires like the Wazia, the Dillinger 5, these are the kind of tweener tires. They're not a powder tire. They're not a pure race tire, you know, like as far as like the lightest, you know, fastest rolling, whatever. You know, they're kind of in this in-between category. So, you know, when you've got like a really good envelope of like a wide range, that's where the tweener tire like just shines.
Okay.
So, you know, I feel like the Wazia, it's a little bit better in like powder type conditions.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
The Dillinger 5 is a little bit better in groom type conditions.
Yeah.
But they both are super good, super versatile tires.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been really, really, really stoked to play around the Wazias. I have to pass them off to Gomez here in the next day or so.
Man, can we talk about that guy? Hey, we're going to take a break because we don't want to talk about Gomez. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back, and we've got a couple more things, and then we'll go right into emails because I got to get home. we're back. Here we are.
Just want to let you know, we still have a sleeping golden next to us.
We do. You just won't hear him snore.
No. We went back to the old school mic setup.
Right. Camber of the new groomer.
Yeah. We got
to
talk about that.
We got to go back to this groomer thing.
I know I gushed a bunch about, you know, the groomer.
Just a bit.
However, I there's another important aspect about the groomer that I think has to be mentioned. So normally when you're grooming, you're leveling out the trail based upon what is underneath the, like, the vehicle and the groomer and stuff like that. You can't control the camber of the trail, like the banking right. of corners and stuff like that. Yep. All you're really doing is, you know, the thing just, like, you know, presses down.
Right.
So with the track sled, you actually have the ability to kind of control the roll, you know, in talking in airplane terms.
How's that?
Because there's two different things. So the one negative to a track sled is that it is a little bit tippy as far as, like, the internal combustion engine ones. If you're in really deep snow, you have to work to keep the thing upright instead of it tilting over too far.
Okay. But, yeah, because it doesn't take much of a tilt to shut that thing down.
Right, yeah, because there's a, like, basically a oil pump fuel shutoff, so that if the oil in the pan, you know, you kind of lean it over so far so it can't pump oil into the engine,
right.
It shuts the fuel off.
Right.
So you get to, I don't know, maybe a 20-degree lean angle.
Okay.
Off to the left, as far as our particular device goes, and that fuel shutoff will happen. So there's sometimes, like, well, you'll go into a bank corner and you will kind of, and the reason why we're talking about this is because with a track sled, you not only control directionally where it goes, but you also control how the thing leans.
Yeah.
So going into a corner, the way you initiate a corner is that you first kind of lean the device into the corner, and then you actually kind of, like, steer the device around the corner. And
yeah.
It makes these really,
like,
nice,
a jet ski.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's, it, you kind of, you carve
old jet skis.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the stand up jet skis.
Stand up jet skis.
Yeah. So you have to carve your corners. And, now sometimes the pan still will, you know, the pan is sort of independent of the tread on the track sled. You know, they're yeah. more or less, they're attached, you know, by a hitch, and they can do different things. So, you know, then you've got this platform you're standing on, and you can move around on the platform. So if you want for the inside of the corner to dig down deeper, what you do is you kind of shimmy your feet over, and you stand more on the inside of the pan on the inside of the corner.
Gotcha.
It puts more weight in. It digs in more over there. It adds more on the other side. So you can actually renovate camber to the trail.
You're going
to
be a grooming artist.
Well, this gives you more ability to be a grooming artist than any other device I've run into.
Just a good old-fashioned groomer. Excuse me, but I'm an artist? Like, oh. Okay.
Yes,
you don't build bike
snow
frames.
Snow into artwork.
Yes, exactly. Yes. That you will just get...
I'm going to groom my masterpiece.
Hours of pleasure on by riding through it.
Yeah. To tell you how bad it is, man, I'm trying to remember. There's a Dylan song, and I've already forgotten it now, but something about painting his masterpiece. Oh, yeah. I had that stuck in my head the first time I rode this because the conditions were so good. I mean, like... Oh my goodness. I can't believe that, you know, me and Mike ended up crafting this. This is a masterpiece. I mean, it was that good. And this obviously is a biased source, but it was that just, like, blow your mind good.
When I paint my masterpiece. Yes.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Yes.
Right.
Wow. Yes, Dylan.
Okay. Wait a minute. How people are listening to this right now? Hey, Keith, this is how crazy it gets, okay? He's a grooming artist, and he was out grooming his masterpiece.
I'm not a better groomer than other people. It's just, it's like when you got the right tool and you kind of, like, become one with it, it's an awesome experience. And right. that did end up happening, like, after about an hour and a half with that thing. It was just like, holy crap. It's like, just bring it. I just want more and more and more trail.
Gotcha. We're going to move on.
Yes.
I'm gonna keep moving forward here. You shared with me a article on Pink Bike about some flat protection.
Well, okay, so we had talked about this previously.
Yeah, Huck Norris.
Back, yeah, exactly. Like Eurobike.
Right. Show number fill in the blank.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, Huck Norris, it's this like foam thing that you put in your tire that kind of like splays it out and it prevents pinch flats.
Right. Helps you go tubeless maybe a little bit easier.
Yeah. We've talked about the Schwalbe Procore in the past.
Yeah.
Because it's got some benefits. That's more or less like an inner tire inside of your bigger tire.
Right.
And you can change the pressure in that inner chamber versus the outer chamber. And what it does is it keeps your tire from burping. And then if you happen to bottom out your real tire, it bottoms out on this inner tire and prevents your rim from getting damaged.
Yeah.
And it makes your tires more progressive in their spring curve. In other words, like the amount of force it takes to, you know, deflect the tire ramps up.
Right.
So it can improve, like when it comes to bounciness and things like that with tires, that's because you have too linear of a spring curve and no dampening. It's a combination of factors. But if you can get it so it ramps up a little quicker.
What the heck did he just say? Oh my gosh.
Sorry, this is where you're starting to get more into suspension talk.
Okay.
But if your spring curve changes so it's more progressive, so it gets increasingly more difficult near the end of its stroke,
yeah,
what will happen is like instead of like, so with a lot of plus tires, you're riding it on like kind of like a, you know, normal setup. You're not like really at the limit and it feels really good.
Mm-hmm.
But then you take it to the limit and the tire starts to fold over, or you get these other negative characteristics, like it's bouncy or this, that, or whatever. This would minimize that because on the bigger hits, like when you really max the tire out, it would not deflect as much. You know, it would, as you increasingly get more stress on that casing to deflect it,
yeah,
it would resist it increasingly also.
Okay.
So it's one of those things where, you know, this,
I followed him on that one.
The bottom line is all this, like this Procore and some of these other things we're going to talk about, I think has a lot of applicability to plus tires.
So, yes.
And fat bike tires, not necessarily fat bike tires for flotation in really soft conditions, but fat bike tires when you're riding them during the summer.
Okay.
And you got to worry about them bouncing too much, or you got to worry about them like folding over and, you know, stuff like that.
So if you're interested, if me, the person that's listening to you spew this foreign crap, if I'm a plus bike rider or I ride my fat bike in the summer, this article from Pink Bike is something that I will find interesting and may apply down the road to me.
Right. This is a future technology that I can't believe will not trickle into fat and plus bike world.
Okay.
Essentially, what's going on is there's a bunch of different companies that are doing these things to try to minimize pinch flat issues with tires.
Okay.
And in the downhill world, excuse me, that's a really big deal. You know, they have to go with burly casings and things like that in order to like stiffen them up so that, and more rubber and all these other kinds of things.
So it doesn't squish as much.
Right.
Yeah.
Like if you happen to completely bottom your tire out on your rim, are you going to destroy the rim or not?
Okay.
Is your tire going to get peeled off of the rim? You know, like when you're really cornering hard, which is an issue that
is that bead going to stay in there?
Yeah. I mean, that's an issue that happens all the time with fat bikes and plus bikes because you have just gobs and gobs and gobs and gobs and gobs of traction.
Happened today.
Yeah. So you start to go totally towards, you know, the limit of that traction and you can peel that tire off.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of applicability to our world through this stuff, even though this is kind of more downhillish.
So
there's
this. I want to get to the quote.
Yeah, the quote's the best part.
Anyway.
So I guess what it kind of got released is that there's a new product out there.
Flat Tire Defender.
Yeah. And there's been some real kind of heavy hitters in the industry that have kind of been working behind the scenes to develop this.
Yeah.
Like Aaron Gwynn.
Yeah. Aaron Gwynn talking about it.
Yeah. You know, he's been riding it for like, I don't know, it was like 2 years or something like that. and has done some crazy stuff with this. So it's had some very significant performance enhancements on the downhill end of things.
Yeah.
Under some big names. I mean, like World Cups won, you know, yeah. all sorts of stuff. Like, yeah. you know, big deal.
Right.
Yeah, it adds
for
some
someone
weight.
That's a fat biker and rides a fat bike, I know those names. You know, yeah. you say Aaron Gwynn, I'm like, oh, I know that name.
Yeah.
And I don't pay attention to that type of riding.
Exactly. It's like that's how big a name and that's how big of these results
I was
going to
say
been.
That type of shit, but I Good shouldn't thing. Say those words.
So you've got some heavy hitters on there that have done this.
There's and some cool videos on how to install it and all that stuff and why it works.
There's a lot of variations on this. This is an emerging field of tire wheel technology.
Right.
And this is kind of the latest variation on it. The Huck Norris, that's another variation on this. Procore, that's another variation on
what happened now.
So
what would happen if Huck Norris and Procore were in the same room with this flat tire defender?
We got to do it justice. We cannot lay claim to this quote because this is from the Pink Bike forums.
I'm going to let you read it.
Okay.
Don't screw it up, man.
So Loam 33 wrote.
That's the guy, yeah.
Yeah. It's like one night Huck Norris went to a party with a 12-pack of PBR, but Procore was already there with a nice bottle of red wine. They hooked up with flat tire defender who was sitting in the corner smoking some dank weed. They all went to the back room together and apparently shit got weird. And that's about it. It's like this, it's this emerging area of, you know, like tire and wheel technology.
Yeah.
And everybody's trying different things. It hasn't been zeroed in on yet, but this is important. This is something that is going to roll into a lot of other fields of, you know, the cycling world. So
I want to read every post that guy, that Loam 33 has ever written, because that's awesome.
Yeah, I enjoyed that one. I just read that and it made me smile. So we had to call him out and be like, yes,
apparently
I tip my beard.
It got weird. That's cool. And so that's, check that out. That's pretty cool. That's pretty neat to read and watch and think about at the time that you're watching it. But then today, should we mention what Cody was doing up north?
Heck yeah, we definitely should.
So, oh, sorry. Test rider, we'll call him. Because that's how he refers to himself.
Exactly.
I think it's test rider.
So this is a dude named Cody. He works at a bike shop up in Traverse City. He's a really good guy.
The best bike shop in Traverse City.
Yeah, yes, I'll agree with that. And he's a really good writer. And
yeah, he writes really well.
Yeah, he puts out some very entertaining stuff.
Check out Kolotc. Kolotc.
Yep.
Kolotc. It's great.
Yep. So good guy.
Yeah.
And this is his fat bike science and extremely in-depth guesstimation on the influence of weight on fat bikes.
So he took a really heavy bike and raced it.
Kind of an old school muckaluck.
Yeah, from a couple years ago, 2013.
Yeah. So tubes. You know, aluminum rims, aluminum frame, you know, aluminum fork.
Right.
Wasn't it like a 10-speed drivetrain? And then he ended up riding like his latest and greatest carbon wonder bike with carbon rims.
Well,
and
it was a Bear Claw.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. Which I tested.
Yeah.
Yep.
So a test subject had some opinions about.
Well, he's got some really good data.
He's got some great data to look at.
He had a couple of different races that were lined up, you know, like weekend after weekend after weekend. Something where your fitness is not going to shift that much.
Right.
He collected some good stats as far as like heart rate and some of these different things that, you know, kind of where you can correlate between two different, you know, rides.
Right.
So he's got, you know, two different races, weekend to weekend, talks about the, you know, difference in elevation, talks about what effect that a heavier fat bike has versus a lighter.
Right. And he includes like subjective perceptions of exertion, talks about calories burned using a separate source than Strava. He's got some Strava information on there, some suffer score stuff. But the way he writes, and he comes to a bottom line. I mean, I don't think we need to talk about what he arrives at, but
no, but you should read it.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. No, I was hats off because, I mean, this is, this is one of those things that I struggle with a ton, because there's, you know, there's so many like different minute details that you can collect, you can perceive, you can do all these different things. And it's like, how do you bring that into a whole?
Right.
And Cody did a really good job with that.
He itemized his conclusions like, hey,
yeah,
for this, this, and this, there's, this is what I've, this is my best guesstimation.
Exactly.
Based upon
me. So he did a good job with the article.
But the dude rides a crap ton, so.
Yeah, he's a stud. Yeah. He definitely impresses me. So
it was cool. There's a link to it. So let's get into Read Your Email then. Listener emails.
You didn't want to talk about the article from Single Track about.
I did mention it.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Or about NFS and working with your. I just briefly mentioned it. There's a link about, you know, working. Fat Bikers working with other users, and I just kind of chimed in with my two cents about just working with your national forest or your state or your federal land manager, and how if you build that good relationship, you can get stuff done. So
yep.
That's what I was just talking about. So
play nice and you get places.
Yeah, and they like you. But we've got, I think we've got three.
Yeah.
All right.
Start off with Mark.
A guy named Mark. First, I need to say this, though. This guy's name is Mark, and we don't know which Mark it is.
Well, we've had a bunch of Marks.
Right. We can go back and look at
Mark's
email.
Mark's email us a lot.
Right.
Just we can different Marks.
Look back. I think this guy's emailed us before, just looking at his email. And first of all, Mark, looking at your email, the Mark I'm talking to, I thought that I was responding, or I was forwarding it to Ken when I responded to you.
I don't always check email. I get distracted by other stuff. So Andy's the one that keeps me on task and is like, forward this email.
I receive all the emails.
And then I'm like,
folks,
okay, I got to respond to this one.
And this is what I do. I read the email, and if it's like, whoa, what's this guy asking? I forward it on. If it's something I can handle, like a kind of a feel-good story, then I'll respond to you. But so we get this email from Mark, and I'm like, oh my gosh, here's another guy named Mark. How crazy is that? So what I think I'm doing is forwarding it to Ken. And what I'm really doing is responding to Mark. And I say, a guy named Mark.
So Andy was a dick, basically.
I was just
not intentionally.
Hey. No.
And so we're really tardy as far as getting to Mark's question.
Right.
And we do apologize for that. We're going to be better. And I'm going to respond. Now, we just figured this out as we sat down to talk about this.
Right, right. So you got to respond to him.
Yeah, we're going to be good.
But here's his email. He's already heard about this.
Good. I shouldn't even really say we're going to respond, because he's providing a good data point.
Right. He says, hey, guys, interesting show about studded tires. Would like you to know that I am on my third winter riding studded Bud and Lou. I studded them myself with grip studs. They run great, and the knobs are definitely not floppy. I think we mentioned about how floppy knobs.
Yeah, you don't want a floppy knob.
Right, you don't want a floppy knob. They grow up. They grow up like Velcro, and I am fully confident on them on ice. I'm 6'2", 195 pounds. My girlfriend runs, I think he meant studded.
Yep.
He said, my girlfriend runs studded Dillinger fours. She is only 110 pounds, so they are enough tire for her. However, she's tried my Lou and likes it better to avoid slipping while climbing in the loose snow.
I'm assuming that's not a euphemism.
Yeah. I didn't even think about it that way. Keep up the good work, and blah, 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 blah. Take care, Mark. Sent from my iPhone. What's your response?
I don't really have a response. No, I think it's a really good data point. Yeah, I'm really stoked that he ended up mentioning it.
And I think our friend that lives just 10 minutes, 15 minutes north of us, I think he's done those grip studs before.
Yeah.
And I think they work.
Oh, I think grip studs are awesome. Yeah. It's just they're pricey.
It's a great time to sit down and listen to a podcast while you stud your tires.
Yep. Kind of go all zen with it.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
You know, get in the moment.
Exactly. So, no. Thanks, Mark. Sorry about the response I gave you. But you want to go to our friend Graham?
Heck yeah.
So Graham's, he's out in the Northeast, and he says, dear Ken and Andy, at least it's not Mr. Ken this time. I am a recent convert to the podcast, but I find them excellent. You cover a lot of ground, and I find the links and discussion very useful for decisions.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Graham. That name is pronounced with two syllables. It's Graham. Because That happens to be my middle name, so I hope you appreciate it.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Good. Yeah, two syllables. Gotta get it right.
Yep. I'm looking at a new fat bike, or I'm looking at a new bike right now, and I have a resource allocation for you both. I'm a big rider. He's 6'6", 250. Dude, I'm not going to mess with you. And I'm looking at the Vantana El Gordo, Moots Frost Hammer, and Carva Omega Beast. All three offer custom geometry. The Moots is in a class of the field in terms of titanium, but it comes at a steep cost, probably over $25,000. $2,500, sorry. My question, would you go with aluminum or lower grade aluminum and upgrade the components and wheel set significantly, or go with the best frame and upgrade the other parts over time? Also, I'm definitely going tubeless after hearing you guys recap the benefits in the recent rolling resisting testing. Is carbon okay for larger riders? Heck yeah, I could have responded to that. I do mostly double track and trail riding with the occasional single track trail. That's not too technical. It's hard to squeeze such a big dude through some of the stuff normal-sized riders like to do. Your thoughts are appreciated. I've subscribed to the podcast. Gomez thanks you and appreciate all you put into them. Cheers, Graham.
He's from New Hampshire.
New Hampshire.
That's important to note.
Yeah.
Just because it's rocky terrain and stuff like
that. Right, right.
So
right.
a little different than our Midwest world.
A little bit.
So he kind of brings up two different things.
What's that?
You know, one, he talks about, okay, how much money should you invest in a frame versus in wheels versus parts?
Always wheels.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that's, I mean, you couldn't summarize it better.
Dave was talking about today in the parking lot about not knowing what he was going to do with Big John. He's like, I don't know if I'm getting a new bike or if I should get new wheels. I was like, dude, get new wheels. That's
yeah.
a great freaking bike.
Yeah.
Get
no,
new wheels.
And that's, you know, There's been this kind of phrase in the cycling world for years of, you know, 3 pounds on the frame is worth 1 pound on the wheels and blah, blah, blah. But
right.
it's still applicable. And it's even more applicable when it comes to fat bikes because all of a sudden you can take pounds off your wheel set.
Right.
You know, super easily.
Yeah.
I mean, you move from sort of, you know, like the first gen rim, aluminum rims to the second gen aluminum rims.
Yeah.
You can take off, you know, a pound. You know, you go to carbon, you can take off a couple pounds.
And you know what Donnie would say? That's huge.
We don't want to go there.
Okay.
I don't even want to touch that. but it's like, you know, and then you end up going with a custom wheel set or any kind of like wheel builder situation where they're going to actually use decent spokes. Like if you're going with a... Dude, beer on the mic?
Oh, did I?
Yeah, you kind of splashed. Oh. Yeah, it's dripping. I'm hoping that does not screw up the rest of the podcast. so we're hopefully don't experience too many technical difficulties here.
We're good. Still testing.
I don't think it's going to be the same quality. We might want to chop this out.
All right. Hang on.
Shake it out.
Okay.
Put it back on and we'll be good.
Okay.
But if you're going to upgrade anything on your bike, the wheel set is the way to go. And
right.
don't go with stock wheels. And the reason why I say that is because a lot of times stock wheels have crappy spokes. Crappy just wheel build. You know, like a machine-built wheel is not good. You want to go to somebody who's going to be able to, like, customize that wheel set for you as a rider.
If you don't know anybody that can do that, I would go to lacemind29.com.
Yeah, exactly. There's a bunch of really good online sources like that because
yeah.
you're talking about, you know, Mike Kuriak, you know, super knowledgeable guy. He's got a really good business just building wheels. You want to tap into that expertise.
Yeah, yeah.
Because what they're going to do is they're going to be like, okay, how much do you weigh? You know, what is your history with wheels? Where do you ride? And they're going to customize that wheel set so it actually holds up under you under those conditions. It's super important because, you know, you drop a half pound, a pound in your wheel set. That's just like pure joy every time you ride. You know, there's so few places on a bike that you can spend money that's going to make as big a difference as the wheels. So don't screw around.
It's all about the joy.
Oh, heck yeah.
God.
Yeah, it totally is.
Jeez, so oh,
God.
Yeah.
That's one of my biggest pet peeves. Don't skimp on wheels. People
right.
want to get a deal. They want to do this. Whatever. you know, support somebody who is going to make a custom wheel set for you, who knows their shit.
And to spend $1,000 on a set of wheels.
Well,
or $650.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like if you're going for carbon wheels, you should be able to find something good for somewhere in the 1,000-ish range.
Yeah.
You know,
I got an article you can read about them.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like if you're going for aluminum rims, you can end up going a lot cheaper.
Right.
But anyway, you know, your shop might know from, you know, like the stock wheel builds what is appropriate for you. If they, you know, they're kind of a wheel connoisseur kind of bike shop, they don't want to just like order it out of the catalog.
Right.
You know, they want to know like, okay, I'm using double butted spokes. You know, there's so many different things like that. You know, it's like straight gauge spokes are less strong than double butted spokes.
Right.
Because, you know, of a bunch of, you know, engineered type stuff.
I just listened to a great podcast about that.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah, I don't even remember what source it is, but I know which one you're talking about because I listened to it recently too.
Yeah, he really knew his shit.
Yeah, but there's so much stuff that goes into wheel builds. You need to get somebody who really knows their stuff to recommend a wheel for you.
I would also recommend the bike doping website, the KBS wheel build. Seriously?
No. Okay, so. There, I've been approached about people asking me to build wheels for them. But if you're in a different part of the country than you know, Northern Michigan, I don't want to build wheels for you because you're going to find a better local source. You're going to have somebody who's going to be able to support you. And there's somebody who's going to be able to do all the work for you much more easily. This is a homegrown, buy local kind of commodity.
Yeah.
So, you know, you there's either that, you know, like you've got your local dude who can do it at your local shop and you're getting really good customer service, or you're tapping into somebody who just completely knows their shit.
Right.
Like a Mike Kuriak.
Yeah.
You know, who is totally abreast of whatever the latest and greatest is in the industry.
Yeah.
You know, can recommend stuff. He's got, you know, his fingers on all sorts of distribution channels. You know, he can totally pick out the right thing for you.
Sure.
So either you go with the rock star, a Mike Kuriak, kind of like Lace My 29 thing, or you go for your local guy who really knows his shit. And it might be a local wheel builder. It might be a local shop. You know, there's somebody in your local area that really knows how to do it right.
Right. So if you're within 500 miles of this podcast, shoot us an email at fatcamppodcasters.com, gmail.com. And you might get a set of wheels from KBS if you order up the right thing. But no, that's a good point. You can go. I mean, Mike, he susses out what you exactly need.
Exactly.
But to go, down to your local shop and find the guy that can do it too,
And you got to feel out your local shop. I mean, there's some people that'll talk like they know what they're doing, and there's some people that will actually know what they're doing.
Oh, good point.
You know, it's like, it's hard to suss that out. So, you know, your local bike community is huge for determining that.
Right. What do you think about those three bikes that he's looking at?
Okay, so we got way far away from two plural gram.
There's no way hell I'm going to be home on time.
But I guess the bottom line is wheels make a bigger difference than anything else. Definitely always invest in wheels above anything else. The three bikes he lists, they're very kind of across the board. So the Ventana El Gordo, I couldn't really find. They kind of have specific levels of customization. If you go for the biggest customization, that could end up being, you know, sort of one thing. And where I kind of came up from with this is that this is a, you know, Graham's a big dude. I'm not going to beat around the bush.
6'6", 250.
Yeah, and typically when you get big dudes, stock stuff doesn't work.
Right.
I kind of fall in that category. I'm 6'4". I got a pretty long upper body. I don't have short legs, but I don't have super long legs. You know, I've been riding a ton of years, and custom makes such a dramatic difference. And, you know, Andy, you're somebody who's, I hate to put it this way, but fairly normal. You know, you're not particularly tall. You're not particularly short. You're pretty middle of the road.
Mic drop. He's calling me out, man. Throwing me under the bus. No, you're right. I'm a normal dude.
What is your impression of getting a custom bike?
Cosmic.
Yeah. There's freaking pixie dust, you know, sprinkled into that frame when you get a bike that is built for you.
Yeah.
So even if you're, I mean, it can range from you being a freak, you know, like sizing wise,
right?
You know, you're like you're like on that super narrow part of the bell curve, or you can end up being pretty much in the middle. And a custom builder is going to offer you a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I looked at the options for the three bikes that Graham listed, you know, Moots can build you whatever the hell you need. I mean, they can go full custom, you know, just like crazy stuff.
Yeah.
They can completely adapt it to you. They've got the expertise. If you tap into the right person there, you're going to totally get that.
Yeah.
You know, when you're that kind of like, I don't know, you know, outlier kind of person as far as your, you know, your height and things like that, there's a lot of time you're not going to want to get a bike off the shelf. And you're not going to know what is the appropriate thing to get. Okay. But that custom builder, they can spend, you know, an hour with you.
Go ahead.
That's Andy, like, getting texted that he needs to get home.
No. Oh, keep going.
Okay. But the bottom line is, you know, a custom builder can spend, you know, 30 minutes to 45 minutes with somebody, and they can know what is appropriate for them. And they have... that customer has no flipping clue the subtlety and the experience that is tapped into to do that.
I want to go ride my bike right now.
I cannot overemphasize how magical a custom builder can be.
All right, then we're going to get But if I'm going to get a custom bike, I don't know what my dream bike is, you know. I don't know what my perfect bike is. Because, and I've heard this excuse
on other podcasts
that people don't want to get a custom bike because they don't know exactly what they want.
Well, but that's,
they don't, you know, it's
that's,
like,
I'll be honest. It's like, you know, bikes are transient. You know, how many of us end up getting a bike that we keep, you know, as our primary daily rider for more than 5 years? Not that many, like, avid cyclists.
Right.
You know,
no.
And if you want to get the best possible bike that you can get for, you know, a 5 year span, you go to a custom builder and that you explain, I want this bike to do this. I want to be able to do this. And if that custom builder is like worth their salt, they're going to produce a bike that is going to be the best possible bike for you for that period of time, for almost bar anybody, especially if you're kind of a freak show when it comes to your sizing. You know, if you have a hard time fitting a normal bike, definitely they're going to end up providing it. If you're a pretty normal dude, they're still probably going to end up providing it for the 5 years.
I really hope my wife's not listening to this podcast, because the last bike I got was the last bike that I got.
Yeah, but the thing is, you know, you got a bike that was very similar to mine. We're talking about like the
Judas Goat.
Yeah, the Quirine Judas Goat, which is a four-season bike. You can change, you know, it's got an angle set on the front end, so you can change the head tube angle.
Sliding drops.
Yep, slider dropouts, so chain you can stays. Change, you know, the chainstay length on it.
Yep.
It's just a really, 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 really versatile bike. And there's been numerous times, I mean, I've gone through a lot of different bikes. I mean, I've got, just a quiver of, like, kick butt bikes, because I'm a dork, and that's just what I do.
Yeah.
But that Judas Goat is still, you know, 4 years. Maybe it's 5 years now. It's somewhere around that. Yeah. It's getting old.
Wow.
But it's still the best bike I've ever owned.
Yeah.
And that's where the custom comes in. So, you know, kind of getting back to Graham's question.
He
kind of throws out a couple different brands there. And I don't think the material makes a difference.
Okay.
I mean, titanium is great because it's non-corrosive.
Right.
It's got kind of a magical, like, slightly aluminum, slightly steel type ride.
Right.
But it isn't, I mean, it's if you've got the money, go for that for 5 years. But if you don't have the money, get a steel custom bike. Because, I mean, that's what you've got.
Like me.
Yeah. And it's like, when you look into it, it's like a steel tube set weighs exactly the same as a tie tube set. The difference is all the other stuff that you have to end up tacking onto it. The dropouts, the water bottle bosses, the head tube, all this other kind of stuff. So, you know, a good custom builder, if they're building a performance steel bike, it's going to end up being like the 4.5 to 5 pound frame range, unless you want them to build it really durable or you're getting full suspension or blah, 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 blah.
Do you think a custom guy can, I mean, is aluminum, tie, and steel, are you splitting hairs when you talk about a custom frame?
Yeah.
If, in terms of weight?
If that custom builder really knows their shit, you know, they're going to build a 4.5 pound
You meant stuff.
Steel. Yes, I did.
Yes.
They're going to build a 4.5 pound steel bike, and they're going to build, you know, like a 3.75 pound tie bike.
Dude, you just exploded the whole audience of our listeners, man, because they're just like, no way.
Well, but it gets back to where does it count to spend your money? You want to get a frame that fits you well. You want to get a frame that handles the way you want it to. You want to get a frame that will handle the wheels and the conditions you're going to run into. You want to get the best possible wheel set for your conditions because that, you know, the lightest, the best, you know, tubeless setup, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's going to really provide your performance. The other kind of aspects of it are going to provide the enjoyment. I'm not really sure how else to end up putting it.
Yeah.
And you're going to give up very little. You know, it's like you could end up having a total bike that weighs 2 pounds more. And if it's all in the kind of like the frame and the components versus the wheel set, it's not going to make a difference.
Oh,
you know, you might lose 20 feet on a longer, you know, climb, like a, you know, like a 10 minute climb or whatever,
right?
You know, you're going to lose a little bit of time there, but it's not going to be that big a deal because you're going to be more comfortable on it. You're going to be able to relax other places. You're going to be able to save energy. Net, you're going to be ahead.
So, this is what made, I was thinking about this as you were saying that, is said quality custom builder better than what Trek, Specialized, and Giant does?
Okay, so what, like Trek or Specialized, or,
you know,
or I'm even going to call out the Otso. I mean, the Otso I entered riding recently.
Yeah.
That, if it happened to exactly align with your dimensions and what your riding intent was, I would say it's superior to the custom builder because they've been able to provide all these efficiencies as far as material. They've gotten into material science. They've cut these molds. They've done all this very, you know, like, okay, for this specific scenario,
yeah,
we're going to optimize it. But the problem is, does that specific scenario align with where you are as a rider?
Okay.
And you can lose just as much in that variation from where you align and where that specific model is as you would as far as the material science that they put into the bike.
Okay.
So, you know, let's say Trek. I think that's a great example because they're doing a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah.
You know, carbon bike, and then, you know, they're going with 27.5 wheels and a lot of those types of things. You know, if that happens to fit you really well, and you can do everything you want to be able to do on it, that's probably a more optimal setup than a custom builder. But there's a lot of scenarios where the custom builder provides you with something more because of you being a unique person.
Yeah.
That you get that in that avenue.
Yeah.
So, okay.
I guess if I'm a guy buying a bike and I look at a 906, 907...
If you don't have an opinion, you don't know. I mean, it kind of going back to your thing of, I don't know what I want. You know, that custom builder can help you to know what you want by talking to them.
Right.
But if you don't have like a ballpark idea, you know, it's like, I mean, like when you built up your bike,
yeah,
you were like, I know I want to fit Bud and Lou on 80s.
Yep.
I know I want to be able to fit 29 plus.
Yep.
I know I want to be able to put a suspension fork on there.
Want to be able to put a, yep.
Yeah, I basically want to have a really steep head tube angle for summer single track ripping because we've got terrain that you need to be able to keep the bike upright to be able to get around.
Yeah.
So you want to have like a 71 or 71.5 degree head angle with a fair amount of fork rake.
Right.
You know, 50 some millimeters of fork rake.
Yep.
So, and then in the winter, you want to have a much more stable bike because you know you're going to be slipping and sliding around. And you want to be able to get it back up to that like 100 millimeters of trail figure.
Right.
What bike is going to be able to do that? The only bike in the world that's going to be able to do that is a custom bike.
Is the one that's made for me to do that.
Exactly.
Okay.
But if, you know, it's like that was one of those things where you had some pretty specific ramifications. You might not have phrased it like I did, but...
No, basically you told me that's what I needed.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like... that's part of, you know, hanging out with me and being a dork.
Right.
You know?
And that's why five other people did the same damn darn thing.
Well, and exactly. And that's the reason why it's worked so well because, you know, we all go riding together and you're like, holy shit, how are you able to ride that? You know, or ride that fast
right,
whatever. So you see the range of stuff that you can end up doing with a well-tuned bike. And then I've been able to provide a little bit of context of, hey, this is the well-tuned thing.
Oh, they're getting out of control again.
Yeah, we've got some.
What do you need, Murph?
Yep, we got two dogs that need to go out. Apologize, Graham. We've been really long-winded.
We've been just totally shredding.
Blah blah blah. But this is what I kind of wanted to put in an email, but I wasn't sure how to like distill down. So I tried.
Okay.
But carbon wheels, go carbon wheels. Yeah. Carbon wheels kick ass.
Yep.
Yeah, carbon wheels are so awesome.
He's not too big.
No, not at all. I mean, New Hampshire is going to be a tough environment because you're going to have a lot of rocks and things like that.
Yeah.
But it sounds like he's riding on some fairly mellow stuff.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to be okay.
Okay.
How mind wide? Your pressure.
I think he's, I mean, 80s would be fine.
Yeah, I think 80s would be great. I mean, I still feel like 80s are the best all-round fat bike.
That's why I ride them. On purpose.
But so kind of getting back to the bikes he mentions, he's got the Vantana, which his varying levels of aluminum like customization. He's got the Moots, which can go like crazy customization.
Okay.
And then he talks about the Carver, which in general, you're like, they're basically contracting it to someplace overseas. And you got to tell that person, I want this, 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 and this. And then you got to cross your finger and hope that it actually shows up on your doorstep with this, 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 and that.
All right.
So I'm not trying to like rip on the Carver. I think the Carver is like, especially the titanium Carver, Omega Beast that fits, you know, like a 2XL tire.
Okay.
That could be a really, really kick butt setup for Graham because he's a big dude.
Yeah.
And 2XLs can make a humongous difference as far as float and things like that. So, you know, the Carver could be really good because that's the only bike that will fit a 2XL on here. And it's a tie bike. It's going to be a solid, you know, it's going to be, you know, a decent performing bike if Graham is a normal size.
Right.
If Graham doesn't fit, you know, like the normal parameters of sizing, it might not be the best bike. You know, the Moots, he's going to get, if he goes the full custom treatment and really communicates with him and works with him, he's going to get like an amazing bike.
Right.
Vantana, if he goes the full custom option, he's going to get an amazing bike. You know, but both of the Vantana and the Moots, I mean, they're going to be limited to 4.8 inch tires on 100 mil rims. At his weight, if he's dealing with a bunch of snow, that might not be ideal.
Gotcha.
But it sounds to me like, you know, it's a little more chill. He probably would be good with like an 80 mil rim. He'd probably be good with, you know, making sure he's got 4.8 inch clearance. You know, he can run that no problem. I think he'll probably do just fine with that kind of setup.
Wow. Three questions.
But
like probably a half hour.
But he brought in some like key concepts, you know, that I feel like are really important to talk about.
Right. All right. Hey, Graham, don't email us again. It'll blow up into a podcast you don't want to listen to. No, seriously, that was great. Thanks. Appreciate it. I'm just being slightly sarcastic. The next email comes from Brian. And Brian says, I was recently looking for studded fat bike tire options, and that led me to your number 20 podcast. And parentheses, I got to mention this. I've since been listening to all the rest, and he loves it. Thanks, Brian. That's why we do it. These conversations happen all the time. We just happen to record them. Anyway, I'm up in New Hampshire and bought a Big John in the fall primarily to keep riding all winter. I ride in all conditions from fresh snow to frozen lakes, snowmobile tracks to four-wheeler tracks. It's almost all cases except freshies. In almost all cases except freshies, I end up encountering ice on the trails at inopportune times, like bombing down a hill to find a giant frozen puddle. I've been running the stock jumbo gym so far, and except for ice, I'd say it's been adequate. I'm looking to stay in the 4.8-inch size, so that seems to narrow me down to the new Snow Avalanche or the Dilly 5s. My main concern with the V-tire is the history of that honeycomb pattern apparently holding snow. Do you have any feedback on how the PSC compound fixes that or not? In the podcast, you made comment of the lines on the lines of, I wouldn't want to be caught in fresh snow with these, but that was about all I could discern. Dude, Kent, can you explain it better? Anyway, what would you recommend for a generic all-winter long studded tire? Do you think it's worth waiting until next year to see if there are any new options or a redesigned Dillinger 5? I've made it this far. Thanks, and keep up the casting. That's from Brian. Ladies and gentlemen, Ken Blakey Shell.
Okay, so next year, God only knows what's coming out. I'm not enough of an insider. There's some things like with the Wrathchild, which is a 45 North trial tire. That sounds like if you're not being a racer boy, it might be the best blend of aggressively knobbed, bigger casing tires.
Sweet.
Now, when we get into this, you know, he talks about, you know, being narrowed down to the Snow Avalanche and the Dillinger 5. Quite frankly, I kind of view those as being on two different parts of the tire spectrum when it comes to their casing size.
Okay.
The Snow Avalanche comes in a 4 and a 4.8. Both of those are true measurements. It's a fairly fast rolling tread design. It's got higher side knobs. It's got lower center knobs.
Okay.
So it's one of those things where it's going to be kind of a tweener tire for drive traction.
Yep.
But it's going to corner well.
Sounds like our last podcast that we had.
Yeah, I think we talked about that a lot.
Yeah.
The Dillinger 5, that's more of a tweener tire when it comes to the casing size. That's like, you know, your 4.6-inch tire. It's like halfway between a 4-inch and a 4.8-inch tire.
Okay.
So it's, you know, if Brian really wanted to go with a high volume tire, a true 4.8-inch tire, the Dillinger 5 is going to fall short.
Okay.
It's not going to cut it. And like, same thing with the Terrain Wazia. The Terrain Wazia, same exact casing size as a Dillinger 5.
What about the Avalanche, though?
Now, the Avalanche is a bigger tire. The Avalanche is a big flipping tire. It's like, it's the same size as like the Vittoria Cannoli, the Bud and the Lou. Well,
that's slightly, what you had on the other night.
Yeah, it's slightly smaller than the Bud and Lou. So if you really want to have that wide of a tire, you know, going with a Dillinger 5 or a Terrain Wazia is probably a compromise you don't want to make. If you need to have the 4.8-inch volume for deep snow flotation.
Right. You won't get the flotation out of that maybe possibly better studded tire. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the Snow Avalanche versus the Dillinger 5, there's other aspects to them. It seems like as far as drive traction goes, they're in the same ballpark.
Okay.
I don't think there's a big difference. I think the Snow Avalanche corners better in a lot of conditions because it's got really tall side knobs. Stud performance is much more variable. Initially when we were on textured snow, it seemed like the Snow Avalanche was very good as far as ice traction goes.
Mm-hmm.
But since using, you know, a bunch of different tires since then,
mm-hmm.
it seems like the Dillinger 5 and the Terrain Wazia have significantly better, like, just like glare ice performance compared to the V tires just due to their stud design.
Gotcha.
The V tires have that conical stud, whereas the other two have a more like sharp, spiky stud. So,
dog's dick.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So
bring it back, you know? Come on.
So the V tire is it's a very fast rolling, it's a very good cornering, and it's a high volume tire. It'll have very good tubeless performance. It's going to have decent weight. They tend to wobble a little bit more than some other tires when you mount them up, but it's a solid all-rounder. Whereas the Dillinger 5, that's going to, like, if you're talking like groom conditions, if you're talking, you know, stud performance, I think like the Dillinger 5 or the Wazias have better stud performance.
Okay.
So I think I would go for those. And, you know, based upon what he's talking about, if the Dillinger 5 is good, I would consider both the Dillinger 5 and the Trine Wazia. You know, we talked about this earlier. There's very subtle differences. They're both really good tires. The Wazia is a little bit better in powder situations. Doesn't corner quite as well in groom situations. The Dillinger 5 is, you know, kind of, you know, just the flip side of that. It does really well in groom, you know, situations.
Right.
You know, deep powder, it's not quite as good.
That's a darn good explanation of those tires.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah. So, and now, get into some of the other aspects of what he's talking about with the snow avalanche. I'm trying right now to suss out the difference between the white compound and the black compound.
Oh, yeah. With the V tires. The PSC.
I recently ended up getting a 4.8-inch version of the V-Tire Snow Avalanche. And it was the black compound. I was kind of surprised by how slow it rolled because I had a white 4-inch Snow Avalanche, and the thing kicks butt. It just it rolls like a champ.
Right.
It's one of the fastest fat bike tires I've been on. So it surprised me that the 4.8-inch version would roll slow. And it, like, when I say roll slow, it's comparable to a Bud and Lou,
okay,
which has great grip, which the Snow Avalanche doesn't. So, I'm really looking forward to getting my hands on the white Snow Avalanche.
Cool. That's in the mail?
Supposedly, yes.
Excellent.
Yep. So
everything's always in the mail.
So
I've had something in the mail for years. I still haven't gotten it yet.
It's a great excuse. So what my guess is, and this is only a guess, but my guess is that the white version is going to end up rolling way the heck better based upon the other white V tires I've used.
Right.
I think,
right,
you know, they tend to end up being a really fast rolling tire. And, you know, kind of along those lines, I think that, like, going with a white 4.8-inch V-tire gives you an exceedingly large range. It kind of, as far as the tire performance matches up, it's got better cornering performance by far, and then it's got slightly better cornering traction than, like, a Barbagazzi or, like, a Ground Control from Specialized or a Big Fat Nard or any of those other kind of tweener tires.
It's Murphy. Just ignore him.
Yeah.
Murphy. I like that it's that big and studded.
Yes. So I think we got the Murphle situation taken care of.
Dog taken care of.
Yep. All our dogs are in a dog pile and are happily sleeping together now. Pile.
Yeah, exactly.
So I get this is a hard question to answer because I don't really feel like we have enough information. So let me just like kind of spew my guts for a minute here.
All right.
So being New Hampshire, my guess is rocks. You know, you've got to worry about pinch flats, you got to worry about sidewall durability, you got to worry about a bunch of stuff like that. So that's something where the V tires are going to do pretty darn well. And it's going to be kind of a more budget oriented tire. You know, New Hampshire can get socked in with snow. Having a bigger tire is going to help out when it comes to pinch flats and other issues.
Yeah.
So going with a true 4.8-inch tire, I can see being a benefit for Graham. Brian.
No. Yeah.
So in this situation, I think the V tire could be a really good setup for him. If he goes with a 4.8-inch, you know, the white tire, it's going to roll pretty good. It's going to be really versatile. It's going to help out when he hits those icy patches. It's not going to have the, you know, he talks about running into ice occasionally during a ride versus being like, I'm going to go ride across a lake.
Right.
So, you know, if you're going to ride across a lake, you want to have a really good stud tire.
Sure.
You know, you want a studded tire.
Right.
You don't want to just like an all-rounder. What he talks about is more all-rounder conditions. And I think a V-tire would be really good because you're going to hit a patch of ice. It's still going to be controllable. You're going to, you know, keep it rubber side down. You're going to be okay. So, you know, in his situation, I would definitely look at the V-tires.
Cool.
But,
yeah,
you know, I mean, it's hard to say based upon, you know, what he's talking about and not having ridden there.
No, and this discussion is all, it's all good information to have that, you know, that's the problem with responding or someone, you know, anybody, like you're at work and someone says, hey, I want to get a fat bike. What should I get? You know, it's the same thing with, you know, here's some tire options that I'm looking at. And this is the type of riding I'm doing. But there's this variable here, blah, 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 you know, it's like, whoa.
Well, it kind of gets back to the custom bike thing that I blathered on about for a long time.
Right.
You know, when you really tap into somebody who knows their stuff,
right,
it makes a big difference.
Sure.
So, you know, getting into your scene, you know, really talking to people and like finding out what works locally and, you know, tapping that expertise. I mean, that's going to make a bigger difference in your fat bike experience than a lot right. of other things.
Or like was just mentioned, you could email us at fatcamppodcasters@gmail.com or dot Gmail or at gmail.com.
Yes, at gmail.com.
Holy cow, it's getting late in the podcast. So it's a Gmail account. Also, we're on the only social media that anybody needs to be on. That's the Instagram, and we're at Fat Camp Podcasters. So, we put up some pictures once in a while and, you can check us out there. But, ironically, as we get done with our read your emails, Graham has just responded back to us about some of his decisions, and we're going to hold all listeners
on
the edge of their seat. And we'll tell you what he decided to do with his custom frame, okay?
Excellent.
But, yeah, so show number 22 in the books. I got to get home. I got to eat some dinner. Kids want to see who dad is. So, anyways, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. You can find all our shows at fat-bike.com, including notes for today's show.